B-Pod Studios.
Welcome to Wrestling Inside the Ropes with James Stewart.
I'm the best. I'm the best in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day.
And Mike Sarge Riley.
I don't know if you realize it or not, but you're trespassing on private property. When you walk through here, through these ropes, you're in my yard. Bad things happen in my yard.
Wrestling Inside the Ropes.
Each week, you can listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the podcast page of 985thesportshub.com and on the 985 The Sports Hub app. While you're there, check out all the other original podcasts available from Boston's Home for Sports. Our podcasts are also available at bpodstudios.com and in Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. I am so happy and so excited that Mike Riley and I get to open the new year talking about New Japan Pro Wrestling and Wrestle Kingdom 14, which took place over this past weekend. For those who don't know, New Japan Pro Wrestling was established in 1972. It's more of an athletic style of pro wrestling than WWE, which has been around since 1952-ish. Its generational history in their country is the common denominator, and that's why New Japan is so good and so... That would be the international comparison, is WWE to New Japan. So there's the quick background for those who might not know where we're going to start the show. We'll get to some of the WWE stuff. The Brock Lesnar thing is interesting to me, and what he's doing at the Royal Rumble, might be doing at the Royal Rumble. So I want to talk about that. Mike has a lightning round for us to end the show, which I'm very excited about. The world famous lightning round, if you remember from the Dale and Holly days.
That's right.
It is. We need to get a sponsorship for that. We need a sponsorship for the podcast, which are available.
Good salesman, Jimmy.
I'm trying. I'm trying to do the job that some people might not be doing.
Yeah.
But I wanted to open with what I think is a major developing story in the world of pro wrestling, and it's kind of in its early stages, and that's the relationship between All Elite Wrestling and New Japan Pro Wrestling. And to be clear, I think AEW and New Japan Pro Wrestling are going to work out a deal. They're going to work out a deal with each other. Chris Jericho, during his post-match conversation with the media after Wrestle Kingdom, noted that there's money to be made with a relationship between the two companies, and he would be willing to work with any of the stars in New Japan because it makes sense for business purposes.
Put aside all the hurt feelings, put aside all the egos, put aside all of the issues and politics, and concentrate on great wrestling matches and big business. I can see the amount of money that we can make together with AEW and New Japan, both here in Japan and in the United States and Canada and England and Australia and all around the world. So even though I beat Tanahashi tonight, I would be more than willing to wrestle him again anytime, and I would be more than willing to give him an AEW title shot. And Okada, and Naito, and Suzuki, and Ibushi, and Osprey.
So the story, the TV backstory was, if Tanahashi beat Chris Jericho, he was going to get a championship shot at Chris Jericho's AEW championship. Chris Jericho, of course, tapped out Tanahashi during Wrestle Kingdom weekend. But for TV, this was interesting because it was really the first acknowledgement, and it started with Tanahashi on New Japan programming, that AEW was a thing. Jericho brought the belt over. Jericho mentioned Tony Khan in his promo saying, yep, Tony Khan has approved that if Tanahashi beats me being Chris Jericho, he gets a shot at the AEW championship. So this had to be approved by a lot of people, and it was. So I think this is the start of the relationship. Before I get into why I think it's important and where I think the relationship is going, Mike, your thoughts on the potential relationship of AEW and New Japan Pro Wrestling?
I think this is a great thing for AEW because, you know what, going into the new year, looking at how they kind of ended the Dynamite shows in 2019, and I know we're going to talk about the first one of 2020, but it just didn't seem like they had a lot of momentum there as we went into the new year with AEW. And looking at that roster for AEW, they do need more talent, and this might be the injection that they need, what the doctor ordered here. I'm actually surprised that, you know, with all the money WWE has, that they haven't, you know, gone too hard on the New Japan roster. But now with AEW in the mix here, this may be the best thing for them. And I really hope, for the sake of professional wrestling, that they do cut a deal with New Japan.
So I think WWE already hit their marker for New Japan pro wrestlers when they got AJ Styles, when they got Shinsuke Nakamura, when they got Gallows and Anderson. And I think that they are trying to start NXT Japan.
That would be, yes, that's been talked. That's right.
In the same way that the reason why Lance Storm retired as a trainer to go work with WWE is WWE is going to have NXT Canada soon with their own developmental programs there.
Right.
So WWE is just going to try to make their own stars, and because they're the WWE, they're just going to try to take over the world, literally.
Yeah, it's an empire.
And they can do that because they have billions of dollars, and you know, we'll see how they spend it and where that goes. Here's why this deal is important for AEW. Mike, you mentioned that the star power that AEW needs.
It's too light right now.
It's very thin. Their stars are very thin. But New Japan just lost their television deal in the U.S. Access TV bought Impact. New Japan declined to have a working relationship with Impact. So Access TV essentially kicked them off the station. New Japan, their U.S. office, is planning to tour a lot in the United States in 2020. So maybe Jericho, who wasn't live on Dynamite on Wednesday, went to Japan early to help broker a deal between AEW and New Japan. Here's a key point. The booker of New Japan is Gato. He manages, he used to manage Okada, he managed Jay White. He's in there, but he's also the head booker. Jericho and Gato go back a long time. Both worked in the old war territory in Japan. And if you're familiar with WCW, they had a match at Halloween Havoc in 1997. Now, Chris Jericho on the business side has proven to be a draw for New Japan. The Chris Jericho Kenny Omega match had so much interest outside of Japan that the number is as high as 100,000 new subscribers to New Japan World were just for that Wrestle Kingdom, whereas Jericho versus Kenny Omega.
Sure.
Keep in mind, too, that Kenny Omega, Cody, the Young Bucks have all had successful runs, or at least matches, big time matches in New Japan Pro Wrestling. And as vice presidents of AEW, would have votes in making a relationship happen. Long story short, if AEW and New Japan have a relationship, do we see New Japan invade AEW? And is AEW looking to add New Japan as a counter to Raw and SmackDown invading NXT? The real issue might be, in the end, who wins the, quote, invasion story? And maybe there isn't an invasion story. Maybe it's just a business relationship. Maybe it's just a, you know, you get some talent on your show, we get some new talent in our show in Japan. And maybe those political issues are why a deal doesn't get done, because there's no finish to an invasion. But on the more so on the business side, New Japan helped Ring of Honor sell out Madison Square Garden. And I don't know what kind of relationship right now Ring of Honor and New Japan have, but it might be a little dicey. But the idea that the Bucks, Cody, and Omega helped sell out Madison Square Garden could be an interesting business aspect to it. The other thing to mention here is Jon Moxley is the current IWGP United States champion, which may or not mean anything. But for the sake of my agenda and thinking that AEW and New Japan will have a working relationship, I think it means something. And I think the relationship between the two companies is in its early stages, and it might take some time, but I think it's going to happen.
Yeah, and you know what? And like I said, you connect the dots with the television deal. That's half the battle for the exposure right there. And look at the brand that AEW has with Turner Broadcasting. I mean, did anyone ever really think of Access TV as a powerful? I mean, sure, it's a cable subscription, but you know TNT, you know the Foxes, you know USA. That's a huge deal for them right there. So more exposure. If they can hold this hand in hand here, I think that's the best thing to keep them going and kind of expose them to even a more broader audience, similar to what NXT has done for a newer audience where they are not strictly on the network, but now USA Network, where, you know, again, as we had discussed before, when they were going on USA, build up that new audience there. And that's exactly what New Japan needs here to go hand in hand with AEW. They see the success that they've had in the first year, and now to have even more talent on both sides. For both of those to get those two right there, you could have the same setup, maybe similar to what WWE has done with the Raw, SmackDown, NXT. Similar to that, you could. There's so much possibility, but it needs to happen, you know, sooner than later for AEW and New Japan to become business partners here. It has to.
So with that all being said, and we're all hoping because it brings more better matches to the States, now to the matches of Wrestle Kingdom. This is exciting for me. Wrestle Kingdom is a favorite show of mine, has been for a long time. Mike, was there a match or a story from the weekend that jumped out at you?
You know what? I'm going to be honest with you. I actually enjoyed. I know you like the first night better for. Well, I'll let you save that. But my favorite was Okada and Naito, night number two, and I just. Going into it, you know, obviously Okada from the night before and told a good story with his injured knee there when he pretty much had it destroyed by, Jay White, essentially. Naito tried to, you know, get the inside leg there of Okada. And I thought that it was a really good storytelling by both of them right there. And a good reverse off the top rope from what I saw from Naito. He hit it off the top rope on Okada, and Okada landed head first on the ring. Very scary moment there. And I was like, oh my gosh. I thought there was, you know, really, I didn't think this was staged. That really scared me for a second. And, you know, there was a little issue too when Okada got booed by the crowd there in the Tokyo Dome. And it's like, oh boy, this is really, you know, they're really invested in this match here. And a good fall, I guess you could say a near fall for Naito. Okada had a good kick out there at one point, but a really good match from what I saw. That was my favorite match of the two nights there. And Moxley, he's my personal favorite. I think he had a good showing with,
Juice Robinson.
Yep, I love that one. And, you know, but this was my favorite one of the night. And Jericho had a good one, too. But at the end, though, Naito says, let's do it again. He got it ruined by Kenta there, the Bullet Club coming out. So that just sets up so much more right there. It looked like it was going to be one of those feel-good WrestleMania ending storytelling moments there. But then when Kenta comes out there, pissed people off, shocked it. And that's kind of like a WWE feel to it, if you will. So that was my favorite match. It went 35 minutes. I just really enjoyed that, invested as a wrestling fan seeing that one right there.
So I was down on Okada versus Naito, mainly because Naito walked out with both championships.
Yes, he did.
Don't get me wrong. It was a fabulous, high-quality match, but I'm just not into Naito. And for me, I'm all in on Okada, and I wanted the visual of him with both championships, him being the first person to have both and on that stage. Not that Okada needs it, but it's a personal preference. The WWE comparison for me would be the Ultimate Warrior holding both titles at WrestleMania 6 after beating Hogan, which was the first time I cried for a wrestling match. It wouldn't be the last time, but when Kenta jumped Naito, I got really excited because I liked Kenta Kobashi when he was doing Ring of Honor work. And if you're looking for a match that really, I think a signature match of the Kenta Kobashi career that isn't in New Japan, there's a match I think it was 05, 06 with Samoa Joe in Ring of Honor that I think people should go out of their way to find.
Yep, yep.
But I'm just not into Naito. I'm just there's something that's just missing there for me with him and his work. Like, I was thrilled that Ibushi beat him in Madison Square Garden for the Intercontinental Championship. There's something about Ibushi that I just like a lot.
I hear you. I mean, there's a personal preference for everyone. I just respect Naito, and I read up on him before the match, too, doing a little more, you know, homework on him there. And I did see in the match that he actually did the Stardust Press.
Yep.
And that was his signature move when he was actually at one point getting that push, which he didn't want. It's kind of like, you know, the Roman Reigns push where he was getting it and the fans were just not buying into it. That's kind of what Naito was getting. But that Stardust Press, that had not been brought out for a long time. That was pretty awesome. So I was all in on Naito there on that match. I love that one with him and Okada. Like you, Jimmy, not too invested going into it, but sometimes those are the best ones when you really appreciate it the most.
So I had two matches from the weekend that really jumped out at me.
Yep.
Because we're not going to dissect every match. There's just, I can't do it. I could do it, but I just don't want to do it. So there were two matches that jumped out at me from the weekend of Wrestle Kingdom, and they're very different. Okada versus Ibushi, I thought was awesome. And I thought Ibushi was going to win this one because I thought it was his time to become the IWGP champion. This was a top-notch main event to start 2020. And the details, I love these little details when I'm watching wrestling matches, was Ibushi almost got disqualified at about the 25-minute mark for throwing too many punches. And the crowd booed Ibushi as this was happening. And what I liked about it was rule enforcements. We're so accustomed to a WWE style where we just accept fists as part of the comeback. But in the world of pro wrestling, sports entertainment, a straight fist is supposed to be illegal. That's why in New Japan you see more forearms, more palm strikes, things of that nature. So I like the rules enforcement, and I like that the crowd booed while this was happening because they knew a rule infraction was going on. Just like a little athletic detail. There were pile driver spots in this match where I thought Okada and Ibushi spiked each other so badly that they were injured. It reminded me Okada took a Snapdragon suplex from Kenny Omega in one of their championships matches. I don't remember which one specifically, and I thought, ooh, that's going to I think Steve Corino even commented on it at the time, so it might have been their first Wrestle Kingdom match. The Okada tombstone pile driver on Ibushi on the ring apron, and Ibushi got back into the ring as Red Shoes was about to say 20. That was great drama because I thought Okada was going to retain on a count out because that tombstone on the hardest part of the ring was good stuff. Okada ended up retaining at night one over Ibushi, the IWGP championship. I thought that was the match of both shows. I thought that match was just, that was awesome. Yep. And the other match that jumped out at me was Jon Moxley versus Lance Archer, the Texas Death Match for the U.S. title, where Jon Moxley regained the IWGP United States Championship. And this was 16 minutes of just good, logical violence. I like this. I like this Texas Death Match. Some of my favorite moments from the match were Lance Archer used one of the Young Lions, those are the training people for New Japan, as a weapon against Jon Moxley. Followed up that with a dive over the top rope onto the group of Young Lions. Now you think, oh, well, Roman Reigns does that on SmackDown every week, right?
Right.
Why is it impressive to me? Lance Archer is 6'8" and he's 42 years old.
Right.
So think about a WrestleMania where The Undertaker did a dive onto Batista.
Right.
That's the type of, and I didn't think Lance Archer had it in him to do something like that. So Lance Archer's finishing move is called the Blackout, which is the razor's edge, only instead of him having the opponent's back leaning against the back of his head, it's his full four body that is chest to back of the head. So Archer hit a blackout on Moxley onto the steel chairs that were set up in the ring. Moxley made it up at an 8 count. Again, a small detail that just stands out to me, and you can tell the detailed performers versus the kind of performers. Anytime John Moxley hit an impact move, he immediately signaled for the referee to start a 10 count because mm-hmm. there was urgency to John Moxley. There's intensity to John Moxley that he is out there trying to win his matches.
Yep.
And, you know, Moxley, of course, does the double middle fingers.
Right.
This is something that I have not seen in wrestling since Terry Funk did it in 1989 to Ric Flair. Archer pulled out a plastic bag and put a claw with the plastic bag over Moxley's face. And because he was on top of his opponent, there was no 10 count.
Right.
So Moxley couldn't tap out.
Yeah.
And the commentators are like, "Oh, he's gonna kill John Moxley."
Yeah.
And Archer eventually gave up the hold because you can't do anything with it, right? Because it's a death match. It's a 10 count finish.
Right.
Beautiful Terry Funk spot there.
Yeah.
And Terry Funk got into a lot of trouble for using a plastic bag to try to suffocate Ric Flair in 1989. So I imagine that the phone lines for him to be fired were lighting up, you know, because that's what we're trying to do. So Moxley hit a Death Rider double arm DDT off the apron through two tables. Archer didn't beat the count. Moxley won the U.S. title that he never really lost, or that he had to forfeit because he couldn't get to an event because of a typhoon. So John Moxley is the IWGP United States champion.
And just to touch on that, on night number two there with the match with Juice Robinson, for Moxley there, I mean, the aftermath, I think that was the big storytelling here with Suzuki, and that looks like the feud that we never got at the G1 Summit. So that's a big tease that we're going to be seeing here, and I'm actually very excited for that. Moxley and Suzuki, and by the way, the G1 Summit was announced for later in the summer, early
it's
fall,
be October now.
Yeah, because of the Olympics in Tokyo. So you'll get a Dominion probably like mid-July or whatnot.
Oh, it'll Dominion be June. Okay. Is June 10, 11, 12, something like that.
Okay. Yeah, all right. So now you'll have the G1 in October. So that's I kind of like that. I appreciate that a little more build up to it. So that's going to be really good. Moxley and Suzuki there for that. But that was another back and forth match. But the Archer one, I think that was the better of the two for Moxley at the Wrestle Kingdom this weekend.
Just good stuff from the weekend of Wrestle Kingdom. And that's kind of
really good.
That's what stood out to us from the weekend of Wrestle Kingdom. And yeah, go ahead, Mike.
Yeah. And just to touch briefly, the Jericho Tamahashi.
Which was good.
Match too. Yeah, it's just like it was. They definitely had an issue with the copyright because you didn't hear Jericho's music.
Which
you didn't hear
Jericho
that.
Said on his podcast at some point this year that he's given them the right to use it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah. And then, you know, Jericho, he had, it was a good match overall. The Eddie Guerrero frog splash, Tamahashi rolled out of that. Referee got a bump there, so then, you know, things get a little bad with the low blow and back and forth, and again, I was disappointed that we're not going to see the AEW championship match here between the two. I really was building up to that and having high hopes, but now with this possible in storytelling, of course, but now with the possible hand-in-hand deal behind the scenes, it could happen, but for the storytelling aspect, that I think that would have been a nice little tease to bring into AEW.
It would have been interesting because that would have been three straight losses in New Japan for Chris Jericho had Tanahashi mm-hmm. won.
Yep.
So you might still see the AEW championship match between Jericho and Tanahashi, or maybe it's going to be Jericho and Okada at Dominion for the AEW championship if Jericho's still there, or, you know, whatever. They can figure that out, but
yeah, and that crowd was hot for that match.
Oh,
they
yeah,
hot.
Of course it was. And
great
this
crowd.
Is something about Jericho that I think has gotten lost in WWE circles.
Yeah.
Is WWE performers, I feel like, are just worried in trying to get to their next spot.
Yep.
Jericho is one of many wrestlers who will acknowledge the fans. So he's taking pictures with the camera, and he's double birding the fans. He's right. flipping off the fans. He's right. telling the fans, shut up. Don't cheer for Tanahashi.
Yeah.
He's doing
yeah.
all those things. He's involving the crowd, which right. I think is just – it. I just think that there should be more of that, and that brings the people in that they're there and to acknowledge that it's not just a TV show. It's a live event show.
Exactly. Yep. It's a real deal.
And, you know, going from New Japan and Chris Jericho as the AEW champion, I was fortunate enough where I could put all of my focus on AEW's Dynamite on Wednesday night, start to finish in real time. NXT was a best of award show, and I really liked AEW's offering on TNT this week. Mm-hmm. The Elite, Cody, Omega, the Bucks, even Adam Page and his seemingly newfound drinking problem, they felt like the Elite. They felt like the top wrestlers in the States that are not under WWE contract.
Right.
And they need to do more of this. Showcase the stars. Tell us why they are stars. JR's storytelling of questioning, you know, are they still the Elite? That played out through the night. Taz.
Great on commentary.
God, have I missed Taz.
Oh, he was fantastic.
He was awesome in the analyst role. And
yep.
The key with Taz, he has tremendous awareness of when to focus on wrestling and when to make a joke. And that is something that you can't teach. That is just so important to the product, where not everything is supposed to be a one-liner. There are times where you need to focus on wrestlers' history, what the wrestler's doing, what the move is doing. It just it helps so much. And it was the Elite standing tall. It wasn't whatever the Dark Order is throwing fake punches.
Right.
And when I say fake punches, I mean like missing Dustin Rhodes totally, which that's a gift that you can find on the internet. Mm-hmm. I really thought that this was a top to bottom strong wrestling show. Huge. The women's roster still feels thin, but Britt Baker having a little bit of an edge is a step in the right direction for her character as she got beaten by the women's champion, who they need a new women's champion. They just do.
Rio, right? Yeah.
The Jon Moxley, Chris Jericho story progressed. The MJF Cody story was advanced. MJF announced the stipulations for his match with Cody at AEW's Revolution, which will take place in Chicago on February 29th. Mike, I absolutely love these stipulations because for 2 months, 2 months, Cody can't touch MJF or until the match is off.
Right.
Cody at some point has to beat MJF's bodyguard, Warlord. I know. I'm making fun of him because he's just another one of these guys in a steel cage. And MJF gets to whip Cody on live TV.
Ten times. Yeah.
You know, that's 2 months of just good building and storytelling.
Right. I think the
or it has the potential to be, I should say.
No, it's true. The steel cage one, I mean, I could probably do without. I'd rather just see him cut right to the chase. But MJF, holy cow, this guy is fantastic on the microphone. And then just, you know, ripping the people of Jacksonville, Florida, too, to start it off a cheap pop like that to, you know, get them all pissed off. That was really good stuff. So this is going to be a good story here between the two. After Cody had the opening match there with Darby Allin and Arn Anderson at his side as well. And again, so that really got things more exciting here as we get closer to February for Cody and MJF. So really good show. And then I think you talked about Dustin Rhodes and Sammy G. Hager came in there to kind of settle the score or at the tail end of it there with Dustin Rhodes. So looks like we're going to be seeing that rival take off again there, because that's the one who injured his arm. Hager broke his arm there. So I'm excited to see how that pans out. But yes, I'm with you, James. This was a much needed, like, 4 out of 5 star show for AEW. It really was, because the last month has been a little, you know, not the best, heavily invested, but this was really good. Sets up a good beginning of 2020 for the promotion.
AEW still needs to work out its production issues, and audio, video, camera shots can be better. But they'll figure that out. And we're also spoiled by what a well-run operation the WWE is with their production. They know how to light things. They know how to shoot things. This is where their scripting comes in handy and helps, is they know where to be, how to shoot it, and all that stuff. And where AEW, I feel like, is a little bit more call it in the ring.
Yep.
And you have to have the production people kind of catch up.
And this was actually the first AEW Dynamite when Jericho was not there in the flesh. We only saw the video of him. So, you know, his deal he had there with Moxley, 49% of the Inner Circle. So a good tease there to see what's going to, if he's going to buy into that.
And Mike, what I like about that is a legitimate, like, people now are buying stocks in companies.
Yes,
like, that's something that's relatable.
Right.
So it's easy to understand. I'm not just offering you X. I'm offering you like a company investment.
Right. Exactly. And then, you know, the license plate he's talking about.
And they have a deal with Ford. I mean, that's obvious that Ford's a big time sponsor.
Yeah.
Cody did the Ford truck thing before product placement.
Yeah.
Nice car. Really nice car.
It's a great car. You can't beat that. Yeah. So a really good show here. And I know you touched briefly on Taz there, but he was so good.
Taz is awesome.
Oh, he's fantastic. Just make it a two-man booth, him and JR. I love Tony Schiavone. Make it a two-man booth, though. JR and Taz, that's it.
So you need Excalibur there because he knows, because of his work in PWG, he knows the Bucks, he knows Cody, he knows all those guys so well inside and out. JR still has the enthusiasm to tell the story, and Taz can just fill in blanks. You know, Schiavone can fill in blanks. That's what that role is for. And if they use Taz just on Dark, that's okay. And have it, because Tony Schiavone's next conflict, I think, is, you know, if he's doing baseball season.
Oh, yeah.
If he's still doing minor league baseball.
Right.
But outside of that, I mean, Taz should be on their payroll. Taz just left CBS Sports Radio Network, where he had a full-time morning show. And he's now out from there. So if Taz isn't under an AEW contract, he should be, because he's still got some miles left on that odometer.
Lock him up before someone else does.
I've listened to enough of his podcast where he seems very, I don't want to say bitter at WWE, but I think he doesn't appreciate how he was used in WWE.
No.
And I think he doesn't like how he's been forgotten in the WWE history.
Yeah.
And that's just a vibe. I've had two interactions with Taz in my life, and that's the degree of that.
It just wasn't booked well there in the WWE. Never really had that, you know, coming out. I mean, sure, he was a big build up from the ECW days, and his logo and the music and everything was really cool, but he never really had, I can't think of a good Taz match in WWE. I just can't.
Because he was never allowed to have one. And the debut match that he had with Kurt Angle, and Taz is on record as saying, the moment that the Madison Square Garden popped for me, he knew he was dead.
Yep, there you go.
Because he wasn't a WWE creation, and what they do is they grind you down to build you back up.
Yep.
And that's what they did. And so outside of that match, Taz had his moment. He had his moment in Madison Square Garden against Kurt Angle, and that was kind of it.
Yeah, but I can't think of, it just never really had it. Never got that top of the, I mean, he was great in commentary on SmackDown. It's fantastic, and I hope he does carry that out here in the AEW or somewhere else, but
Taz was one of my favorites from ECW. For the longest time, my only championship belt that I had was the Taz ECW belt.
Is that right?
Yeah. And it hangs on my wall proudly. And because it says Taz, like, you cannot buy this anywhere. Wow. Because the WWE website took out the Taz part of it.
Wow. Did he sign that for you?
He did not, because Taz, up until StarCast in Vegas and StarCast in Baltimore, Taz did not do meet and greets. He did not do personal appearances. I thought it would be a slam dunk that he would be at WrestleCon.
Right.
And that would have motivated me to find a way to get to WrestleCon to get this thing signed, but
Yeah.
He didn't do WrestleCon. He did Vegas, he did Baltimore, and that'll probably be the last time that Taz does anything, because StarCast is probably StarCast, I think, is on the shelf for a little while.
Yeah, there's a little got a little too big before they should have, I think.
Oh no, StarCast is fine, but they I think they ran
they made a lot.
Three successful ones, and I think Baltimore didn't do as well as it should have.
Yeah.
And I think it's just it's going to be put to the side for a little bit.
Take a breather and then build it back up.
Somebody who's taken a breather for a while now is Brock Lesnar.
Who?
And he is scheduled to be on Raw this week. And maybe if you're listening to this on Monday night, as we're recording on Sunday, he's already made an appearance on Monday Night Raw. I texted Mike this on Thursday. And my question to him was, who do you want Brock to fight for the WWE Championship at the Royal Rumble? And Mike, hold your answer here.
I won't say a word.
I want Brock Lesnar to defend the WWE Championship in the Royal Rumble match. That's right. I want Brock Lesnar versus 29 other superstars in a championship title defense. And with there being no clear main event for WrestleMania that I'm into, and I don't think that the WWE knows what it's doing for its WrestleMania main event. So as of the fifth day of 2020, the WWE not having a main event for WrestleMania just kind of blows my mind.
Mm-hmm.
So with this suggestion, the WWE puts the championship on the line in the Royal Rumble match. I don't see a clear opponent for Brock Lesnar right now. So have him defend against 29 other superstars. And I don't think this will happen, but for the sake of this conversation, my two personal favorite Royal Rumble matches were had the WWE Championship on the line. 92 with Ric Flair when he won the championship in 2016 when Triple H won, and that was Roman Reigns going in there at number one as the defending champion, one versus all. Now, Brock wouldn't go in at one. You'd have Brock come in at 30 and do whatever you're going to do.
Okay.
But I like the idea of having the championship on the line because legitimately anybody could win the thing, and you can't call who would win the thing in the way that Triple H winning, you couldn't call. Ric Flair winning, you couldn't call.
Right.
And this is where the really in-depth storytelling can begin for not only that night, but for WrestleMania. John Cena, surprise entrant. It allows Michael Cole or Vic Venom or Vic Joseph, whatever his name is. Vic Venom, of course, was Vince Russo.
Vic Joseph, yeah.
It can, if Cena is a surprise entrant, it can put the thought in people's mind about, wow, he could claim his 17th championship win by winning the Royal Rumble and beating 29 other opponents. But it can also set up if you're doing that story for WrestleMania. Or maybe Bill Goldberg is in the Rumble and he eliminates John Cena, setting up a match between these two because Bill Goldberg has cost John Cena his chance at championship 17. Maybe The Undertaker is a surprise entrant and you can have Drew McIntyre eliminate The Undertaker, screwing The Undertaker out of what might be his last chance at the WWE Championship, and that can set up a match at WrestleMania. Does Edge come back? Because he just signed a contract. There's rumors that he's going to be doing some matches for WWE. Does Sting come back? There's rumors that Sting might be doing matches for WWE or doing something. You can have Brock Lesnar retain if you want.
Yeah.
But if you want Seth Rollins to get the WWE Championship back and maybe have Kevin Owens chase it until WrestleMania, you could start that story here. And then it can add to Seth Rollins' resume, and Seth Rollins can brag about beating Brock Lesnar three times on three major stages in a calendar year for a major championship. Maybe Seth's wins haven't been believable, but it's pro wrestling. Maybe it'll become ingrained in people's mind if you keep saying it. So, Mike, what do you think about my scenario? And then we'll get to your idea for Brock Lesnar.
So I like it, and I don't. If you're going to have Brock Lesnar in there defend it, he needs to be there as the number one. And there's a reason why you can't have him in there. The reason why I say that is he's supposedly, you know, the most dangerous guy in the WWE. They've built him up and so forth, and no one has been able to really take him down. Obviously, of course, we just mentioned there were Seth Rollins and a few others, very limited like that. But this is a huge deal for Brock Lesnar, who's not on TV, is an attraction. So make that attraction be in there. And that's the beauty of the Royal Rumble, where so many people can do the work. And maybe Brock does beat all 30 guys. There he is right there, 29 other superstars, rather. There he is, the last one standing after the first one in there. That is a remarkable thing to do. So he'd have to go number one. A couple of other surprise entrants I wouldn't be shocked about that you didn't mention. I would not rule out Hulk Hogan. You can't rule him out because there's been talk that he wants one more match. He's been very open about that.
Here's why I rule Hulk Hogan out.
Okay.
How do you throw Hulk Hogan over the top rope?
Oh, jeez. Do you have him win?
In the same way that the Iron Sheik won the WrestleMania 17 Royal Battle Royal Legends gimmick Battle Royal.
Right.
Because you couldn't throw him out over the top rope because you'd be afraid he'd hurt himself.
My God. You know what? So I was my next guy, so that's going to kill it here, would be Stone Cold Steve Austin. That's off the table, too.
So Steve Austin, in an interview recently in his own podcast, said he doesn't want to come back.
But, all right.
He's been very consistent because he gave the middle finger to all these fantasy bookers who want him coming back.
The Hogan one, the only way he can get him out is for him to, like, literally go over the top rope and chase someone out. That's the only way. He'll have to walk out himself. Stupid, but that's the only surprise.
He can't deliver the leg drop right now.
No, it's impossible. That's out. So, Brock, as far as that scenario goes, I like it. I'm on board for it, but I think he would have to be number one to show why he is the true champion. Yeah, I'm cool.
Then I would manipulate it so that it was 60-second intervals so that Brock would only have to, you know, Brock could clean house for a while and then Roman comes in and Roman gets him out or Seth, you know, whatever. You can manipulate it because it's pro wrestling, but
don't rule out The Rock either. That's always a possibility as well.
I wouldn't see The Rock for the Rumble, but I could see Rock for WrestleMania. Or one of these Saudi shows.
Mm. Oh, God, yeah, big time. Cain Velasquez could be a surprise entrant.
Cain Velasquez, ugh, I fear that he's winning the thing, too.
I fear he's going to be fighting Brock Lesnar at the Royal Rumble. That's what I fear.
Yeah.
But as far as my opponent would be, as after I thought about it, I mean, he's wanted to be the babyface for a while, and a great opportunity for him to go up against Brock Lesnar would be Kevin Owens. It just makes sense for me to have him, you know, start that feud with Brock right here to begin the new year and just go right after the top dog there. Just bash him. Where have you been? You're a champion, not on TV week by week. Here I am. You know, just go after him. And that would be, I think, a good storytelling thing. Owens has been, you know, this is where he wants to be, and there's your top heel with not the top baby face, but a face, if you will. I think that would be the perfect opponent for Brock Lesnar to defend the WWE Championship at the Royal Rumble against Kevin Owens.
I like the idea of Brock versus Kevin Owens. I don't think it would happen at the Rumble. I think Kevin Owens, if he wins the WWE Championship or the Universal Championship, I think that would be a WrestleMania moment because they could tell the story of Kevin Owens went from not being on WrestleMania in New York to being in the main event of WrestleMania. So I like the match idea. I don't see it here, but of course they put Rey Mysterio with Brock Lesnar. So what do I know? Before we wrap up, you have a lightning round, a world famous tribute to the Dale and Holly Show lightning round.
Four fast questions. Here we go. Let's go right into it here. As we did discuss about a month ago, some things we'd like to see in 2020. But I do want to ask you, James, if you could create one dream match for 2020 and you would be there to see it live in person, which match would you like to see?
I think at the moment I would say Okada versus Adam Cole.
Oh, good choice. Good choice. And would it be like a WrestleMania or?
It doesn't matter. Like
matter.
If I'm traveling, like that would
Okay, yeah, I mean,
that would just be like an interpromotional thing that would be fun.
A little too much of a detail for me there. All right, yeah. Mine would be, now this is because I'm a huge fan, I'm going to have to go Undertaker, Bray Wyatt. I think it's on the table. It's a possibility for WrestleMania. I would really like to see that. And probably Taker's last WrestleMania.
Would you have Taker go over or would you have Bray go over?
I think you got to have Bray go over. I think you have to at this point, you know? So, all right, how about this? Who should be the next inductee into the WWE Hall of Fame?
It should be The Rock,
yep.
But it won't be The Rock because The Rock is going to get his own stage, and The Rock should have had his own stage in Brooklyn.
Right.
But it should be The Rock.
The Rock. Okay. So I'm going to say Bam Bam Bigelow. I think they let the boat sail on this one last year with it being in New Jersey, where that's his home state and so forth. Didn't happen. He should be in there, though. You know, obviously, it would be posthumously, but The Rock, if it ain't going to happen, give me Bam Bam. That's who I think should be in there.
Bam Bam Bigelow, one of the more underappreciated big men in the history of pro wrestling. Like, main evented that WrestleMania against Lawrence Taylor.
Yep.
Had a good match with Bret Hart at King of the Ring. Was a finalist in the 87 Survivor Series against the team of Andre, the One Man Gang, and King Kong Bundy. Like, very, very good. He had that fabulous program with Taz and ECW. Like,
yep.
Oh, Bam Bam, good choice.
Big and fast. So, and I know we just discuss it here. Surprise entrant at the Royal Rumble. Who must be a surprise entrant at the Royal Rumble?
John Cena. I've been on this for a while. John Cena. They have a story that's easy to tell with him chasing 17, and with the fact that WrestleMania ticket sales are not great, and it's Tampa, and John has a house in Tampa. John Cena in the Royal Rumble, I would pick him to win the Royal Rumble if he's in the match and have him fight Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania in Tampa.
I'm cool with that on the men's side. I'm going to go on the women's side here. You got to go Ronda Rousey. That just sets everything up again for Becky and maybe even Charlotte again right there. So that's who I got on the women's side. And finally, James, the next WWE superstar, Raw, SmackDown, NXT, whatever you want, most likely to go to AEW.
I might say The Revival, because I feel like their contracts are coming up soon.
Right after WrestleMania. Yep.
So I'll go with The Revival, but I really don't like that answer, because at the end of the day, I feel like anybody whose contract is up with WWE, they're just going to offer them a boatload of money and they're just going to take it. And I don't count the recent group of like Luke Harper who got released. Because Luke Harper would be the obvious answer, I think.
Yeah.
So somebody who's maybe not an obvious answer, I would say, would be The Revival. But I don't like that answer. I hate that answer.
All right. Fair enough. Okay. I was going to say, now, Nakamura just re-signed, right?
I think that's true. I think that's why they gave him the Intercontinental Championship.
Yeah, which stinks. He would have been great there for AEW. I won't be shocked if Rey Mysterio jumps ship when his contract is up.
Which I think is September 1st.
Yeah, so I think that's the most likely one for this year, WWE superstar to AEW. So there you go. My four fast questions to begin the new year, James. Here we go, baby.
The world famous lightning round. Good job, Mike.
Thank you.
Just as we wrap up here, congratulations to Andrade and Charlotte as they got engaged on New Year's. I look forward to watching their wedding on social media because they do everything on social media. So the need for me to travel internationally for their wedding isn't there.
Hey, and you know what? Good for him. New United States Championship, the day after Christmas, Madison Square Garden, big push for Andrade. Big things in the works for him this year.
Each week, you can listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the podcast page of 98.5thesportshub.com and on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app. While you're there, check out all the other original podcasts available from Boston's Home for Sports. Our podcasts are also available at bpodstudios.com and in Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. For Mike Riley at Sarge985, the show's Twitter account is at WrestleCast985. Coming soon, an email account, which will be WrestleCast985@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter at IamJamesStewart, and we'll talk to you next week.